Dave Griffith Show is underway, and I always say when Chuck Schultz and Jack Freiberg stop by, I don't know what the topic's going to be. I honest to God don't. I don't even know if I'm emceeing this thing. It's just usually a free-for-all. I let these two guys go. But today, of all days, both of these men have stellar announcements to make. I'm going to start with Jack Freiberg because his announcement is literally life-changing. Good morning, Jack Freiberg. How are you?
I'm doing better every day, Mary. Thank you.
You had a kidney transplant.
April 21st. It'll be a month tomorrow.
And let's talk a little bit about that. You had said on the Mary Griffith Show, you know, last year when you were on, we did a thing on organ donation, you and Mr. Schultz, and you had said if you don't get a kidney transplant pretty soon, I mean, you were going to exit. It was kind of a sad thing, but it's the inevitable. And you got this transplant, and it's apparently your body is adjusting to it, and things are getting better every day?
That's exactly right. I'm still weak from the surgery, but I'm walking around quite a bit. I can easily walk a couple, three blocks. And, you know, I got a deceased or a cadaver kidney. And with those, it takes them a little while to wake up because my creatinine, which is a muscle waste that's made, it always gets excreted through your kidney. And it was as high as 7.11, and it has dropped all the way to 1.97.
Wow. Yeah, you are back on the mend. Yeah, it's working.
I haven't done dialysis for 3 weeks tomorrow. So that is...
You don't need it anymore. You've got the new equipment. Do you have any idea who, like, even the age or anything? I mean, like, did you get a 17-year-old kidney or you got a big old kidney?
Well, I don't know that for sure. The international rules don't allow you to learn that right away. But they suggest in 3 months that I go ahead and write a letter to the family.
That's what I did, Jack.
Yeah, and Chuck Schultz is also here today, and he has received a liver transplant, not recently, well, fairly recently.
7 years ago.
7 years ago.
And also a miracle, just like my friend Jack. And we've all been praying and pulling, Jack. And I know you were, how long did you do dialysis? Several years.
A little over three years.
Yeah, so he had a long
Well, week. It is so exciting. I remember a month ago, it was time to be on the Mary Griffith Show. And it's like, Jack can't be there because, you know, he's in the hospital. I said, well, I hope he's in the hospital for a good thing. And that was a good thing. And I'm so proud of you. Also, Jack, maybe you didn't hear, but it was announced today that your cohort here, Chuck Schultz, has been named the Golden Deeds Award winner from the Quincy Exchange Club.
I saw that on one of the media outlets today.
And it's going to be, I'm sure, a roast. I'm sure it'll be a little roast of Mr. Schultz at noon there at the Exchange Club. You can't go, of course. Is there anything you want to say about his illustrious four-decade career that gets him in the Book of Golden Deeds?
That, you know, him being roasted, they couldn't have a more appropriate target.
He had a big target. But, you know, Jack could easily have gotten this, and there's so many more people in this community more deserving than I am. You know, there's folks out there right now mentoring in schools, like Mary and I have done, but... delivering meals on wheels at lunch. You know, you walk in to Blessing Hospital and there's that volunteer stand over there.
Yeah. I mean,
they have literally hundreds of volunteers that are improving the quality of life in Quincy. So I'm really appreciative and humble, but I know that there's a lot of folks that don't get recognized they should. Quincy's a great volunteer community.
There are so many people doing so much. Well, Jack Freiberg, we're just so pleased that you're here today and that you're doing well. And again, with Chuck Schultz and Jack Freiberg, they've been lifelong friends, childhood friends. Now they both have brand new organs to help them live an even longer and more exciting life. And Jack, we're really excited about that. I do want to...
I would guess, Mary, this is the only show in America... that probably has two transplant people on there at the same time.
Who would have thought that in Sister Frances Cabrini's first grade class at St. Peter's that 60-some years later, the two of us would get a new lease on life. I've prayed to a lot of saints. I should probably start praying to Sister Mary Frances.
I guess so. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned first grade. I was thumbing through the Catholic Times last week, and I like to read about the nuns that are having their jubilees and everything. And, of course, I didn't recognize her at all, but my first grade teacher, Sister Jane Ann, was celebrating, like, I don't know, 75 years or something of being a nun or whatever. And I thought to myself, oh, my gosh, I wonder how she survived having me as a first grader.
Well, you know, I am an avid reader of our diocesan newspaper, or it's magazine now, isn't it?
Yes, it is a magazine.
I don't always agree with everything, but...
No, neither do I.
Nevertheless, I looked at the jubilarians in there. There were nuns that, many that are celebrating 50 years and some 60 and even 75, because these nuns just lived forever, God bless them. But they did not have the school sisters of Notre Dame in that article. And two school sisters of Notre Dame that you know, Mary, are having their 50th this year down at REPA this summer. One of them is my sister, Ann Schultz, amazing Quincyan that... definitely needs to get some recognition. You know, she's been all over the world.
And she was at the Vatican for a while.
She's been at the United Nations. She's been a leader all over the world. And the other nun with the Quincy connection that's got her 50th this year is Sister Carl Mary.
Really?
She probably sent you to detention a few times.
We called her
years.
Sister Karl Marx. We called her Sister Carl Marx, but I like Sister Carl Mary.
She did a great
job. Just went along with the crowd, you know. I never got in any mischief by myself. It was usually your sister leading the back of hooligans.
That does not shock me at all. These Schultz girls.
Jack, I have a question for you and for Chuck, and we talked about this a little bit. The primary's coming up here at the end of June, and these ads are just outrageous, I think. They're hysterical. I mean, I'm laughing hysterically at, you know, these ads, because it never is about...
Darren Bailey is a tax-raising liberal. Give me a break.
It's never about what they're going to do for you. It's always about how awful their opponent is. Now, Jack, you skew Republican. What do you think is the upshot of all this vitriol, you know, with the Mary Miller campaign, with the gubernatorial campaign? How can any of this be good for Republicans in the general election?
Well, I think it's a tough situation here on Mary Miller and Rodney Davis, because they were that district, the way it was redrawn by Democrats, they knew they were going to draw it so that there were going to be two incumbent Democrats or two incumbent Republicans against one another. And the thing about this race is it really represents the two branches of the Republican Party in general now. One, I mean, by the heavy Trump advocates that just seem that it's going to be Trump or nobody else. And Mary Miller very proudly includes her endorsement by Donald Trump in almost all of her ads. And Rodney Davis, on the other hand, has been in Congress for a while. Mary Miller is a first termer, and he has enough seniority that there's a very good chance if he wins the race that he will be some kind of committee head. And if you're going to vote in the Republican primary, and Chuck and I have talked about this several times, I think there's going to be several Democrats that are going to pull Republican ballots this year and vote for Rodney Davis because they don't want to see somebody in the far right as their representative.
We have talked about that, and Chuck said that. Chuck, by doing that, are you basically acquiescing that congressman will be a Republican, the Democrat that faces either Miller or Rodney Davis in November has no chance?
Well, you never say never, but it's one of the most Republican districts in the country.
So,
the feeling is whoever wins that June 28th primary will be our representative in Congress. And
is that why you feel Democrats have, well, they have the legal right to pull a Republican ballot in the primary.
Sure.
Nobody can prevent you from voting. But, I mean, a lot of people would say, well, now, hey, that's not right. Someone like Mary Griffith, I associate myself as a Democrat. Why should I go down and grab a Republican ballot just to make sure that, you know, maybe the candidate I like the least, you know, doesn't get it. Is that really fair? Is that what the primary system is about? Or is it like, this is my only chance to influence this because the Democrat has no chance?
Right. And if you can't elect a Democrat, you're going to choose the
Republican that's the most likable.
Well, that would hopefully be the most effective for our community and for this region. And I've known Rodney Davis since he worked for Congressman John Shimkus and back in the days when I was at City Hall. And we worked together very well. As chairman of the State Board of Elections, I went out to Washington and met with Rodney and his staff. He is the ranking member on the administration committee, which oversees our elections. And as Jack said, if the Republicans take back the House, he'll be a chairman. He's also right behind another area legislator, Sam Graves, on the Transportation Committee. So that could be very helpful to
Graves
all of us in this region.
Graves and Davis could be
both
a powerhouse in
absolutely
transportation.
Whereas the other candidate, I think, will suffer from lack of committee assignments and not be able to be effective as far as getting anything done that would benefit the region.
What is your reaction to the other Trump versus Republican, Trump versus the non-Trump? We had one in Pennsylvania. I don't even know if it's decided yet. Jack Freiberg, were you surprised that Donald Trump didn't do better in some of his Trump-endorsed races?
Donald Trump was very popular. There's no doubt about it. And I still agreed with most of his policies. But the thing that turns people off is that bombastic personality that just never knows when to shut his mouth. And particularly the January 6th incident, that turned a lot of people that were Trump supporters off, the way that was endorsed by President. Another thing I kind of want to add here as a side, I asked Rodney Davis that very question about, you know, is there going to be any general election? And he said, no, that this primary election is going to decide who gets the seat.
And the reason the two of them are together, Mary, is Illinois has lost population.
Right.
So we have lost...
Graves is over in Missouri. They've lost one, too. And so Graves is... district has gotten bigger. He's now even farther down into Audrain County. So as we lose population, we lose clout in Washington. And of course, we don't know who the power in party will be after the midterms. But Chuck, I'll ask both of you. Do you think the Republicans will take back the House?
Well, that's likely based on a number
okay
of factors. First and foremost, it's the off-year first term. So if you think back to 1994, Clinton's first off year,
it always happens.
It was a dark night for the Democrats.
For Democrats.
And 2010 was Obama's first off year, and it was a huge shift. You're talking about losing maybe 40, 50, 60 seats with that kind of a swing out of 435. So I haven't given up hope, but, yeah, it's very likely that and as a result anything that they can get passed before November.
And Freiberg, sure you're probably on the opposite side of the fence. You're sitting there going, just hanging on till November, right?
Well, I really honestly think that they're going to take back the House. I think the Senate's going to be a push. Don't you on that one, Chuck?
Well, it's very close, but I think that the Democrats have excellent opportunities to pick up Republican seats in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, maybe not so much North Carolina. But you're right, we have to defend some, too. In Georgia, I think we're going to get a break there if they're nominating Herschel Walker, who has a lot of baggage. So sometimes, you know, the strength is what you said earlier, Mary. You come out of these primaries, you've appealed to the extreme wing of your party. Those are the zealots that turn out in a primary. Well, then those same strengths in the primary are what weakens you in the general election, because you've got a long way to go to get back to the middle to be competitive. And I think they're probably going to nominate some unelectable candidates. Part of it is just because of Trump, but I think there's other factors. Next Tuesday is Georgia, so that'll be a good one to watch Trump has it in for Brian Kemp, the governor. He was Secretary of State before and all of those election issues. And they've got a formidable candidate against him. Perdue was a former United States senator. But it looks like Kemp's going to win that one. So that would be a real rebuke for Trump in Georgia.
You know, it's so interesting. I want both of you to comment on this, Jack, first. You know, you don't hear George W. Bush getting too involved. You don't hear Barack Obama getting too involved. I mean, you don't hear Al Gore or too many people getting too involved. They might campaign a little bit, but Trump is really, I mean, he's all in. Is that unusual? Am I wrong? Is that unusual?
Totally. That was, you know, retired presidents.
Just kind of
quietly
went away.
But
Jack, let me ask you this. Is it a good thing, maybe? Because after all, somebody liked Trump. More people, you know, that he got elected. He was our president. Is it unrealistic to think that he'll just be dignified and go play golf? Or because of, you know, the personality he is it, and do you see presidents doing this in the future?
The difference, I think, with Trump is that he really thought he won the election and that it was stolen from him from the various states. And he has a kind of zealousness about going back into that executive position, the presidency, unlike anybody I've seen in my lifetime that wants to go back into that job. I mean, when you think about it, you know, it's very rare, and there's only been one president.
Chester Arthur, right?
Yeah, exactly. That was elected, you know, elected twice, but not consecutively.
Well, he lost by 7 million votes in the general election, lost by 3 million to Hillary, 7 million to Biden. I think it'd be even worse this time. And I don't, you know, we're dealing with a real malignant case of narcissistic personality disorder here. So I don't want to predict what this guy will do, but I doubt if he actually pulls the trigger and runs because he doesn't want to get beat a second time.
Well, okay, let's beat up on... Go ahead, Jack.
The Democrats have those folks, too.
Oh, yeah.
No shortage of...
Jack, you jumped the gun. I was going to say, what in the heck? I mean, I'm sorry, but I would assume that the average person would say Joe Biden should not attempt a reelection bid. Not even if what they say is not true. It's been sad. I mean, I don't know if the guy, you know, I mean, everybody said Donald Trump was insane or had a brain tumor. And now everybody's saying, you know, Joe Biden has got Alzheimer's or whatever. But we literally, this is going to be an intriguing, the next 2 years. I mean, do you think Biden will sacrifice himself a second term for the good of the Democratic Party? Chuck,
I think that's possible. I think that's possible. But, you know, with Joe Biden, the thing is, you know, he might misspeak and people say, oh, my gosh, he's 78 years old. Hey, he would misspeak when he was
38
years old. You know, he was one of the youngest senators ever. And back in the 80s, when he ran for president in 88, he would put his foot in his mouth. He's just one of those guys that engages mouth before brain. But I think he's been pretty circumspect. And I think he's doing everything he can. He's catching, you know, this horrible break with the inflationary and then the Ukrainian situation driving everything.
Yeah.
So who knows what will happen between now and November. But as far as 2024, I'd say, yeah, there's a good chance that he would not run again. And that would be intriguing. I think you'd have a lot of people run, but I think obviously Kamala Harris would be a front runner, but I think Pete Buttigieg would too.
Okay. Jack, what do you think?
Well, first of all, a repeat of the Biden-Trump as our nominees for presidency is kind of a nightmare for me.
I think it's a nightmare for everybody.
And if you put any kind of spin on this thing, you know, just the obvious fact that they would both be in well into their 80s. I think Trump is 78, so he would be 82. And how old is Biden now? He's older than Trump.
Well, yeah, he's 78, maybe
79, something like that.
Yeah. So he would be 83 when he finishes. And I read an article not too long ago about a journalist that had followed from Delaware that had followed Joe Biden's career. And he just says, obviously, he is not the same man that he was when he ran in 88. He was a lot more dynamic, had a lot more strength. And so he's
I don't
just
know about that. He lost in 88 and he won in
Well, let's put it this way. So. Here's the other problem with all of this, is we sit here and say if you get to be a certain age, you shouldn't be president. Well, that's not really a very nice statement or a true statement. The real problem is politicians hang on like grim death. They never want to give up their power. Trump won't give up his power.
Well, look at Grassley.
Yeah, what is he, 89?
Oh, God, Grassley.
And he's running for a six-year term.
But he's so popular.
I think he's 88, but he would be 94 when he finishes his term.
But let me ask you this. I'm going to play devil's advocate. So what?
Yeah.
If his policies, and he can wheel him in like Strom Thurmond, I mean, he lived in a nursing home. If you can wheel the guy in and he can vote the best interest of Iowa, who cares if he's 108?
Well, I think he's very capable.
I totally agree with that. And you know, when he gives his talks, he seems like he's totally with it. So we should really judge this on the individual person, I think.
Well, it's hard to tell through the other end of the TV.
Well, the other thing that's going to happen is, and we all know this because we know how politics works, and we'd all be silly if we didn't say it, Chuck Grassley will get reelected, and then a year or two or whatever it is minimum that, you know, he will resign and they'll appoint somebody to take his place, and that person will then become the ipso facto incumbent, and the Republican Party will guarantee that seat then ad nauseum. Hey, we've got to take a break. Jack, do you feel well enough to stay along and keep talking, or do you...
Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, great. Well, that is good to hear. We're going to take a break. We're going to head up and... We are back 15 minutes away from Fox News at the top of the hour. Joining me in studio, as they do this time every month. Well, in studio is Chuck Schultz, who is the winner this year of the Golden Deeds Award. So he'll leave from here and go over to the Exchange Club, where in exchange of being honored as a Golden Deeds winner, I'm sure they will massacre him in a roast of immense proportions.
I could tell a few corny jokes on some of those guys, too.
And then Jack Freiberg, who I have never been more happy to have on the Mary Griffith Show, also joins us because Jack just received a life-saving kidney transplant, and it's been 1 month tomorrow since he got the cadaver kidney, and it does take a time for it to wake up and get reacquainted with being in a human body, but Jack, you say you're not on dialysis. Your creatinine numbers are good. You're fully on your way to recovery.
Yeah, I really think I'm a very lucky guy. One of the nephrologists, when I saw him for a follow-up, told me that I got a very, very good kidney.
Good.
So that's a really encouraging thing to hear.
And this would be our opportunity, Mary, to say,
let's talk
so
about
easy
organ donors.
To become
yeah,
a donor. You can do it. Do the Secretary of State on the driver's license. You can do it online at lifegoeson.com. You're not going to need that kidney once you pass away. And look what it's doing. A great man in our community is going to have a new lease on life. So please consider that. Illinois has probably the largest percentage of our population in the country that are listed as donors, but we need more. There's 5,000 people in Illinois right now waiting for a transplant, and sadly, within the next year, 350 of them will pass away because they didn't get their transplant. Jack waited a long time.
Go ahead, Jack.
As a kidney donor, you can also be a living donor.
Right.
And, you know, it's a situation where you still have to match, and I had a couple people that stepped forward to do that with me, but for one reason or another, it didn't work out.
So, Jack, what I did, you mentioned 3 months. I think with the Mid-America Transplant Consortium that Barnes, Jack and I both went to Barnes Hospital in St. Louis, you wait 3 months because they want to make sure it was successful, and then you can write the consortium. They will then contact the family and say, would you like to have a letter? Or would you accept a letter? And then you can write the letter. You can't identify yourself in any way, but you can express your gratitude. And like I did with mine, I said, I want you to know that I'm still trying to promote more donors, so your loved one's gift continues, hopefully,
yeah,
to do good.
Why
but anyway,
we, why
then
they
get
people,
the letter.
Yeah, they get the letter.
And then they could find out who we were, the recipient.
If they wanted.
If they wanted to, and write us back. So I was checking my mailbox pretty carefully there for a few months, but I did not receive a reply. I'll never know who my donor was, but, you know, I pray for my donor and the family, and I am eternally grateful. But hopefully, Jack, I think it would be interesting to know. The only thing I know is I had my transplant on a Friday night, and as Jack said, he's still recovering just from the surgery. The surgery itself is really going to set you back a while, but you're up, you're walking, you're doing good, and you'll get everything back. But nevertheless, I went in 2 days after my transplant for another 8 hours of surgery, which was making everything work. They call it the architecture. And one of the things they mentioned to me was that my new bile ducts, twice the size of my old ones. So that leads me to think that it was probably a male donor, probably a large person. At Barnes, they call motorcycles donor cycles, because yeah. Frequently they'll have someone that died with a head injury, but all the organs are good. So my particular donor, and maybe Jack's, could have saved a dozen lives.
Right. Jack, how I know that, you know, you and Chuck have come on, you've been on here, you've promoted among your friend group, among service clubs, on the Mary Griffith Show, the importance of organ donation. Everybody needs to think about this and sign that organ donor card, because like you said, nobody needs these organs after you've passed. And there is, I think, still this myth going around, which irritates me because, again, false information, that somehow they would let you die in the emergency room in order to harvest your organs, and that is absolutely not true.
No, of course not.
Nothing could be further from the truth than that. You know, it's a situation where, because he said I got a very, very good kidney, I am surmising that it's a young person that died in an accident, but I really don't know that.
And it could be male or female. You know, my granddaughter Nancy, when I got home from St. Louis, she said, "Opa, how's Susie?" And I said, "I don't know. Who's Susie?" And she said, "That's your new lever." So my lever has a name, Susie.
Well, you know, that's interesting. You would have had little relationship with those grandchildren.
Yeah, Nancy's the oldest, and she was only five at the
time.
Yeah,
so you would just have limited relationship. You wouldn't even know some of your grandkids, probably.
Some of them weren't born. Others... you know, I gave him a big hug and said, "Hey, I'm going to dance at your wedding now." So, Opa's going to be around for a while.
Because it's amazing, the medical technology and how much it has improved. Because
it's only been about 30 years since they've been doing the transplants.
And you know, you think about it, in the 19th century, Chuck and I both would have been dead a long time ago.
Absolutely.
If it hadn't been for Cotton Eye Joe. Hey, Jack, I'm going to let you go. I am so thankful that you joined us today. I'm going to close out and have Chuck say a few words about the Golden Deeds Award. But thank you so very much, Jack Freiberg. And like I said, I'm always happy to see guests on the Mary Griffith Show, but I have never been more excited to have you on the show than I am today. And a month ago, I was thinking of you and praying for you and hoping that everything would work out okay. And we are just thrilled beyond compare that you're going to be back with us for month and month to come. So take good care of yourself. Take good care of that new kidney. And we will talk to you again in a month, okay?
Yeah, I thank you so much, Mary. With a little bit of luck, I'll be there.
That will be great.
We will look forward to that, Jack.
I am praying for that, too. And I just want to thank everyone who's prayed and been supportive of me, because there's been a lot of people that have been incredibly supportive.
It's a wonderful thing, Jack.
Well, thank you, and I know you're emotional because literally a stranger saved your life, and literally your prayers have been answered, and I cannot imagine what a wonderful feeling that must be to know that, you know, it says no greater love hath man that he lay down his life for another, and whoever signed that organ donor card didn't know Jack Freiberg, but because of that unselfish act, you're going to be here for many years to come. So we love you, Jack, and thank you, and we'll talk to you next month.
Thank you very much, you guys.
Take care, my friend.
It's a pleasure being with you. All right.
Thank you. Okay, Chuck, last remaining moments with you, and I do want to talk about the Golden Deeds. Nobody ever thinks they deserve it. You've been around for four decades. When you look back and you talk about the unsung heroes in our community, you are in a higher profile role as former mayor, and you've been an attorney, and your family's from here, and you've seen Quincy over, you know, six decades of your life. What is it? This book of Golden Deeds is about this exemplary attitude about putting others before self. And you join a list of a lot of people and some who will always remain unsung. What is it about our Quincy spirit and our Quincy community that kind of builds this kind of Golden Deeds kind of people?
It's a great question because I have a really close friend who's a retired professor of sociology in Germany. And he studies natural disasters. And he would point out to me, Mary, that not everybody responds like we do around here. You know, I kind of got baptized in the river, took office in May of 93, and in June we were up to our ears in the great flood. And what my good professor friend says is, you know, many places there's looting. People start hoarding everything. They don't just pull together. And what happened in the flood of 93, you know, you go out to the sandbag site at QU Stadium, and you have these hundreds of people that are working in the heat and the rain and whatever. And you know what? They're not trying to save their own house. They're making these sandbags for people they don't know, but they want to help. I go around the site and say, hey, thanks so much for coming out. And they say, no, thank you. We wanted to do something. You know, we can't go out in the levee district and we want to be safe, but we want to help. Well, when you ask that question, here's the conclusion I have, is somehow those ethics were ingrained from one generation to the next. At the Exchange Club today, I'm going to tell the story about Sister Mary Timothy. Following the flood, I had made a speech down at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale about flood recovery, and it was carried in the Mattoon newspaper. So I got this letter from a nursing home in Mattoon, Illinois, and it said, hey, I read about you in our paper, and I saw that name Charles Schultz, and I took a little pride in that because I believe I taught your father in the fifth grade at St. Francis School. And I wrote her back, and I said, Sister, you know, you're a hero of the flood because you taught all those kids at St. Francis for all those years, and just like other teachers throughout our community, our coaches, our parents, of course, first and foremost, but you know, all those people ingrained those values. So, boom, the flood hits in 93. I put out the word. You know, I remember calling up Kenny Cantrell, the superintendent of the streets. I said, how many sandbags have we got? He said, oh, we got plenty. We got 10,000. And I said, well, do we need them all? He said, no, I'm going to save about 5,000 for the water plant. I said, well, bring the rest of them out to QU Stadium and put them in the parking lot. I'm going to call for volunteers. 5,000 sandbags. Mary, at the height of that, we'd had these Chinook helicopters drop 100,000 sandbags at a time. We had, you know, 16 trucks pulling in sand from way down at Fall Creek. And, you know, they'd be out before the trucks could come back with more sand. It was incredible. Amazing. But that, I think that we owe our parents and our teachers and our preachers and our grandparents, they're the ones that ingrained those values in this community, and that's why we respond the way we do.
I want to encourage everyone to continue to do that. Yesterday they had Hannibal Pirate Pride Day, and the seniors went out and did some real manual labor, you know, because some of these young kids can really haul and bend. And I hope that they will get something intrinsically out of that.
They will.
That they'll continue to love their hometown of Hannibal, we'll continue to love our own hometowns, and we'll say to ourselves, what can I do to give back? Chuck Schultz, Jack Freiberg, thank you for your time today. Folks, that brings another edition of the Mary Griffith Show to an end. We do want to say that we've got it all. We're going to do it all again next week, and we're going to have fantastic guests on from Cornerstone and from the Community Foundation and from all over the place talking about things that make our community great. And if you have something you'd like to talk about on the Mary Griffith Show, you could be a guest. It's really easy. Just contact me through our WTAD internet link. Well, you know, Steve will have to do it for me because I have no idea. But WTAD.com, but he'll get it to me. Or just email me. My email's real simple. It's mgriffith, mgriffith, at starradio.com. Star Radio just has one R. Love to hear from you. Love your story ideas. That's what makes this job so exciting. And as far as Jack and Chuck, you never know what they're going to talk about, but we'll be back to do it all again in a month.